This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS. We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-hosts today are Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Discover hidden treasures at the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street in Murfreesboro. Whether you're searching for stylish clothing, sturdy furniture, or even large appliances, we've got them all at prices that you'll love. But here's the best part. 100% of your purchase supports Greenhouse Ministries, serving over 70 families a day. Your shopping dollars go straight back into the community, making a real impact. Shop smart and give back at the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street in Murfreesboro.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting you to come do business with our family while you're Christmas shopping. Santa is on his way to Animal City. Stop in for pet photos on the 13th and 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Stop in to Animal City with your pets to take some great photos with Santa. That's Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
For over a decade, on the first Friday of each month, the Rutherford County District Attorney General's Office has been honored to have been provided airtime as part of the Action Line program. During our broadcast, it is our goal to help keep the community up to date on events occurring in the criminal justice system within our community. I believe one of the most important functions of our program is to keep the community aware of unsolved criminal activity that has plagued our community, especially unsolved murders. As part of that function, it has been my honor to bring to you many of Rutherford County's criminal justice success stories as well. I believe there is no greater success than when our criminal justice system works to solve, prosecute, and convict someone who is guilty of the crime of murder. The success is even greater when the case had remained unsolved for over a decade or more. On today's program, we will examine the problems and the issues involved in investigation and prosecution of these unsolved homicides. And we will also discuss why it is so important that we never forget any unsolved murder. Joining me in this discussion will be former Rutherford County District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. And Bill and I will be joined by former Rutherford County cold case detectives Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin as we discuss the illustrious and proud history of cold case investigations in Rutherford County. We welcome now to the WGNS microphones retired District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr., and his two special guests, retired cold case detectives Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin.
Bill and Dan, when we talk about the cold case unit and the success it's had, I think it all starts with Truman Jones.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And if you would kind of tell the audience about how it began and what it evolved into.
how it started is obviously with the Laura Salmon homicide case, and that was in 2001 when the arrest was made. Shortly thereafter, obviously we had success with you prosecuting and Jay Paul doing a great job on it. But Sheriff Jones asked if we would be interested in starting a cold case unit. Obviously, when we started, we were starting at Bear. We had no idea what we were doing or how we were going about it. But Truman was instrumental in setting that path for us. So it basically started with the Laura Salmon case and then sort of expanded from there.
Remembering the Salmon case and, of course, having prosecuted it, I know it was a case that haunted the sheriff's department, the original detectives that investigated it, my predecessor, Guy Dotson. I know within the DA's office, when I was an assistant, it was reviewed several times, and I know that the sheriff's department reviewed it several times also. And I guess the moral of that story is don't ever give up and good things will happen.
Absolutely. You know, when Dan and I do in services, we often talk about this in way we classified. It's the day that Murfreesboro lost its innocence. They've had murders before, but this was a young girl, teenager. And, you know, I can't say enough about Miss Hammontree, who is Laura's mother. That, as you know, she probably wore you out with phone calls and Guy Dotson Sr. as well. So it is never give up.
Tell us about how do you pick a case to start working on?
And we had no training in it. Bill had worked on a couple of murders before this. I'd never worked a murder. So we went at it from the position of trying to tell the story of why. Bumbled on the good ways to do it and even invented some other stuff ourselves.
Well, certainly technology and the advancements in technology can sometimes be key in these cases. But my experience and working with you all and on all cold cases, it's really a dedication and what some might call gumshoe detective work, re-interviewing witnesses, tracking witnesses down.
We are very fortunate because we had an administration supervisors that supported this endeavor. It's expensive, and we understand that. There's times that we've taken trips that the interviews turned out to be, I don't want to say worthless, but not what we expected. So we've been fortunate on that aspect is being supported by the administrations over the years to continue supporting this. And I think the other thing that's important here, obviously the victims, but the families of the victims, you know, we work closely with all these families. You build a relationship with these families. Some of the families that we've spoken to said, you know, they just want something done and they realize the obstacles that are faced by working these cold cases, lost evidence and so forth, witnesses and suspects. But we had one tell us one time, you know, just going to bat, even if we swing and miss, the fact that we took it and let a jury decide.
I want to tell you that working with you guys was a real honor. I'm just happy that these cases don't go away, that people are always working. And as you stated, if you have any information on a case, please contact the sheriff's department. And I congratulate you on your success.
I want to thank you and General Newman for the years that you put in with us as well. I think we made a fine team and couldn't have done it without you, obviously. So thank you.
People in the Scottish know they have probably the finest prosecutors in the state of Tennessee. And despite our smaller size, some of the highest court rate and a great conviction ratio here.
On a previous broadcast, Bill Weitzel spoke on why our community should be willing to come forward and help solve an unsolved murder. Listen now to Bill's perspective.
Paul, you know this. It's very important on these cases as they get age on them. We want people to know that we don't forget about them. We've got somebody out there that's a murderer. And I know people are sometimes fearful. They're afraid if they give information or something that something may happen to them. And certainly I can understand that. But we need people to come forward and put a violent person behind bars. If this person is arrested and charged and convicted, everybody knows that. And hopefully it would make somebody think twice about taking a human life. So it's dedication on the part of the police and the investigators, but it's also a dedication on the part of our citizens to be a part of the process, because without them, we cannot pursue, arrest, and prosecute these cases. And they're responsible just as much in a way as the police are for making their community a safer place. So I would certainly urge anyone with any information on cases to come forward.
This is Paul Newman. We will be asking for your help in solving a mystery in our cold case profile. You are listening to this special edition of The Action Line on WGNS.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
One of the toughest cases for law enforcement to solve is one where a decomposed body is found and no identification can be located. If it is a male body, the body is simply referred to as John Doe. If it is a female body, they are referred to as Jane Doe. This case involves the death of someone who we can only refer to as Jane Doe. It was November the 14th, 2007, when Detective Bob Hayes of the Laverne Police Department discovered the body of Jane Doe. At the time, Detective Hayes was searching for the body of another completely unrelated murder victim. That victim was Nikki Sissonoe. As Detective Hayes searched the woods for Nikki Sissonoe's body, he made an unexpected and gruesome discovery. Detective Hayes saw what first appeared to him to be animal bones, but upon closer examination, the remains were identified as human, and the remains appeared to be female. The body was badly decomposed, and no identification was located. To make matters worse, the victim's face could only be described as unidentifiable. From that day forward, the body has been referred to as Jane Doe. Her death was indeed a homicide. The cause of her death was a gunshot wound. Experts estimated that Jane Doe's body had been in the field between 4 and 6 months. Here is what is known about Jane Doe. Jane Doe wore jewelry, including an Avon necklace with cat imprints. She also had a ring with amber and emerald-colored stones. Also, forensic artists prepared composite drawings of what they believe Jane Doe may have looked like when she was alive. As a result of all of the investigative efforts, the following information has been assembled. At the time of her death, Jane Doe is believed to have been between 25 and 45 years of age. She was between 5'2" and 5'9" tall. Her hair appears to be dark-colored and curly. One of the strongest leads is that Jane Doe had a lot of dental work. Her dental x-rays have been sent to dentists around the state. The Laverne Police Department has worked for many years trying to identify the body of Jane Doe. Those vast efforts have yielded some information, but Jane Doe's true identity remains a mystery. If you wish to review the information regarding Jane Doe, or view the jewelry that Jane Doe was wearing, or view the artist drawings of how they believe Jane Doe would have appeared when she was alive, go to the internet and simply type in Jane Doe Laverne. A family somewhere has been missing a loved one, and the person or persons who murdered Jane Doe remain free to murder again.
There is an update in the case involving the murder of Jane Doe. We now know the true identity of Jane Doe. Jane Doe's true identity is that of Mary Alice Mahoney. Mary Alice Mahoney was 40 years old at the time of her death. She was originally from the state of Connecticut, but was living in the Nashville area at the time of her death. It was through the efforts of law enforcement, the DNA Doe Project, and citizen involvement that a DNA sample was obtained and successfully matched to be that of Mary Alice Mahoney. We are now a step closer to solving this murder.
If you have information, please contact the Laverne Police Department. The number to call is 615-793-7744. That number again is 615-793-7744.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, Tennessee.
You know, gift cards are always the easiest gift. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. We will buy gift cards and just kind of have them on hand. They're amazing gifts to give to teachers. If you want to give a gift at your workout groups, you know, you have a personal trainer, family members. It's great to give gifts for 16, 17, 18 years old who are just now beginning to date and they need to be able to have some place to take someone on a date to. Gift cards are always the easiest gift. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones, and today I will be your tour guide through this episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in any upcoming trials have been convicted, and they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On October 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired at a residence on Las Casas Pike in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered Mr. Jaleel Turner lying unresponsive on the floor of his apartment, suffering from a gunshot wound to the abdomen. Mr. Turner later died from his injuries. Detective William Pullius with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator. Miss Shakira Brown has been charged with second-degree murder. Miss Brown is represented by counsel Mr. Brent Horst, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. This matter is next scheduled for appearance in General Sessions Court on February 17th of next year. On October 27th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an emergency assist where a man identified as Harold Cruz had sustained injuries to the head. At the conclusion of the investigation, Mr. Clinton Johnson was charged with first-degree murder. On January 24th of this year, Mr. Johnson appeared before the General Sessions Court of Rutherford County and bound his case over for presentment to a grand jury. In August of this year, the grand jury indicted Mr. Johnson for first-degree murder and aggravated robbery. His next appearance is scheduled for February the 19th of this next year. Mr. Johnson is represented by Mr. Drew Perkins, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. On February the 18th of 2024, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call regarding DeMarcus McClinton breaking into the residence of his ex-girlfriend, Tashua Edwards, and her infant child. Mr. McClinton kicked in the door of the apartment and physically assaulted Ms. Edwards and her child. 911 was called immediately by others, and officers responded quickly. Officer Marie Hussles charged Mr. McClinton with aggravated burglary, aggravated assault, domestic assault, and child abuse. A preliminary hearing was held on March 19th of 2024, and the matter was bound over to the grand jury. On May 22nd of this year, a jury trial began, and on May 23rd of this year, a jury of his peers convicted Mr. Clinton of all charges. A sentencing hearing was held on August the 19th of this year, and Judge Jimmy Turner sentenced the defendant to a total effective sentence of 26 years, 11 months, and 29 days to be served in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. The defendant was represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Dana Miner. On January the 15th of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an apartment on Cobalt Row regarding a shooting that occurred during the early morning hours. It was reported that two victims had been at the apartment, and when they left, they were followed by Mr. Adarius Robertson, who drove alongside and then behind them. Around the intersection of South Rutherford Boulevard and MLK Jr. Boulevard, Mr. Robertson began to fire into the vehicle. Bullets struck the rear passenger door, the front passenger seat headrest, the front windshield, and the driver's window. The shooting was witnessed by a Rutherford County deputy who was coincidentally stopped at that intersection. The deputy pursued the defendant into the county and back into Murfreesboro, where the deputy was required to terminate his pursuit for safety reasons. Shortly thereafter, Adarius Robertson wrecked his vehicle and was arrested by the Murfreesboro Police Department. A preliminary hearing was held on April 23rd of 2024, and the court bound the matter over to the grand jury. On July 14th of this year, a jury trial was held, and on July 17th, a jury of his peers found Mr. Robertson guilty of two counts of attempted second-degree murder and one count of aggravated assault. A sentencing hearing was held on September 24th of this year, and the defendant received a total sentence of 18 years to serve in the custody of TDOC. The defendant was represented by counsel Ms. Amanda Gentry, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Tammy Reddig and Sarah Davis. In December of 2022, Detective Ben Segrera with the Murfreesboro Police Department opened an investigation on Mr. Anthony Caldwell regarding allegations of sexual abuse of a minor. The investigation revealed that between February of 2021 and December of 2022, a 12-year-old victim and her 11-year-old sibling were living with their maternal aunt and her husband, Anthony Drew Caldwell. Initially, they lived in Smithville, Tennessee, where the abuse began. They soon moved to Murfreesboro, and the abuse continued and progressed. There were thousands of text messages recovered from the victim's phone between her and the defendant. The maternal grandmother became suspicious of grooming behavior and filed a court order to get visitation with the victim and her sister. During the second visit to grandma's house, she devised a plan to look into the victim's phone. She watched the victim put her passcode in and remembered it. Then she had her husband take the girls out on the boat for the day and made the victim leave her phone so it wouldn't get wet. During that time, the grandmother was able to open the phone and look at the text messages between the defendant and her granddaughter. She took pictures of the texts and called Murfreesboro Police Department to report it. She then drove the girls directly to the police department and turned over the phone. The defendant was interviewed and denied anything sexual and stated he was only joking with his niece, who he viewed as a best friend. Messages and facts from a forensic interview of the victim were presented to a Rutherford County grand jury, and in March of 2023, the grand jury indicted Mr. Caldwell for three counts of rape of a child, two counts of aggravated sexual battery, two counts of especially aggravated sexual exploitation of a minor, soliciting the sexual exploitation of a minor under 13, and continuous sexual abuse of a child. In October of this year, a jury of his peers convicted Mr. Caldwell as charged on all counts of the indictment. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for January 22nd of this next year. The defendant was represented by counsel Mr. David Clark, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Hugh Ammerman. On January 9th of 2023, Detective James Wilkinson with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned to investigate allegations of child abuse by Mr. Travosia Miller. Mr. Miller struck his minor child on the legs approximately 15 times with a belt because the 5-year-old child defecated on the floor. This act left severe welts and bruising on the child. In March of 2023, a Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Miller for aggravated child abuse of a child under the age of 8, and on October 31st of this year, Travosia Miller pled guilty to the attempted aggravated child abuse of a child under 8 years old. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for February 6th of next year. The defendant was represented by counsel Mr. Daniel Murphy, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Hugh Ammerman. In March of 2023, Detective Jesse Gamble with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office was assigned to investigate allegations of child abuse resulting in death. On March 8, 2023, a 3-month-old child was transported to the hospital. Emergency personnel were unable to resuscitate the child, and the child was pronounced dead. An interview of the child's grandmother, Cheryl Bodley, resulted in several conflicting stories, ranging from the child choked while she was bottle feeding the child, to the child was asleep in the bed next to her while she played on her phone and then fell asleep, with Miss Bodley then waking up to the child not breathing and being cold to the touch. The bed Miss Bodily was referring to was cluttered with blankets and pillows, and a pacifier was found under the blankets. A drug screen of Miss Bodily was found to be positive for Suboxone. An autopsy of the infant revealed that the baby had died from acute methamphetamine intoxication. A search warrant was executed on Miss Bodily's phone that showed Miss Bodily was actively involved in drug transactions, including the sale of methamphetamine. In August of 2023, Miss Bodily was indicted for first-degree murder and aggravated child abuse of a child under the age of 8. On October 3rd of this year, Miss Bodily pled guilty to reckless homicide and aggravated child abuse of a child under the age of 8. She received a 12-year sentence to serve. The defendant was represented by counsel, Mr. Darren Drake, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Sharon Reddick. On December 20th of 2021, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a domestic disturbance call in a parking lot. Officers made contact with the complainant and a witness that stated that Mr. Trevor Anderson had confronted and threatened the complainant with a firearm. Officers were in the area and responded quickly when a 911 call was made. Officers observed Mr. Anderson at the vehicle and then watched him quickly walk away. Officers were able to locate Mr. Anderson and also recovered a firearm from the vehicle. Mr. Anderson had dropped the firearm in the vehicle when he saw officers approaching. In July of 2022, a Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Anderson for possession of a handgun by a convicted felon. On April 14th of 25, a jury of his peers convicted Mr. Anderson as charged. Mr. Anderson is scheduled to be sentenced on January 15th of next year and faces a range of punishment of between 12 and 20 years to be served in the Tennessee Department of Corrections custody. The defendant was represented by counsel, Mr. Darren Drake, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Allison Abbott. A trial is scheduled to begin on February the 2nd of next year on Candace Davis for allegations of second-degree murder and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Will Fraley, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on February 9th of next year on Corey Lillard Sr. for allegations of first-degree murder, possession of a Schedule II drug with the intent to sell, possession of a weapon by a convicted felon, employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, and possession of drug paraphernalia. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Will Fraley, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on March 2nd of next year on Cameron Jordan for allegations of second-degree murder, reckless endangerment, tampering with evidence, employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, and unlawful possession of a weapon. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Derek Howard, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on May 4th of next year on Joseph Gann for allegations of second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, aggravated assault, reckless endangerment with a firearm, tampering with evidence, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Josh Crane, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on August the 3rd of 2026 on Juan Charco for allegations of first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, tampering with evidence, reckless endangerment with a firearm, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Jeff Cherry, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on August the 24th of next year on Salim Hamilton for allegations of first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, possession of a handgun by a convicted felon, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by Ms. Heather Parker, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on September the 14th of next year on Ahmad Ali and Kenyon Crawford for allegations of first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, attempted especially aggravated robbery, tampering with evidence, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. Both defendants are represented by counsel, Mr. Brian Lewis and Mr. Luke Willoughby, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. And that will conclude today's look inside the courts.
Broadcasting to every nook and cranny of Rutherford County's 618 square miles. FM 100.5, 101.9, and AM 1450.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Through Sharing Change, MTE members round up their bills to support local nonprofits. Find out more how your spare change can make a difference at sharingchange.org.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
Broadcasting from the tallest tower in the city with that little red light on top. FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450. What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this episode of What's the Law? Today, I will be briefly discussing Tennessee Rule of Criminal Procedure, Rule 8. It's a joinder of offenses and defendants. First of all, what is a joinder? It is where two or more offenses or defendants are joined in the same indictment, presentment, or information. The offenses must be stated in separate counts unless the offenses are consolidated. Rule 8A deals with mandatory or required joinder or consolidation when the offenses are based on the same conduct or arise from the same criminal episode and are within the jurisdiction of a single court and are known to the appropriate prosecuting official at the time of the return of the indictments, presentments, or informations. Failure to join a defendant shall not be subject to separate trials for multiple offenses falling within Rule 8.1 unless they are served pursuant to Tennessee Rules of Criminal Procedure or unless they are severed pursuant to Tennessee Rules of Criminal Procedure Rule 14. What that basically means is if they are not severed by the courts or separated out and authorized by the courts, the state would be precluded from taking out a separate or second indictment to prosecute those individuals. Whatever a court said, the courts have said all crimes arising from the same incident that are not lesser included offense of another criminal charge in the indictment must be charged in separate counts, and the failure to do so precludes the state from later retrying a defendant for any crimes not originally charged. The courts have held that the policy behind requiring joinder is to avoid piecemeal litigation and to disallow the saving back of charges arising from the same conduct or same criminal episode. It also prevents multiple trials for the same criminal conduct or episode. So if an individual is investigated, let's say for selling controlled substances, and the state has a ongoing investigation in over a month period of time, that individual sells narcotics on 5 or 6 different days. The state's indictment would then include those 5 sales, and the courts could rule that if the state tried to break those up without the court's permission, that the state would be precluded from doing 5 separate trials, absent getting the court's approval or consent of the defendant. Now, in dealing with mandatory joinder, you also have permissive joinder of offenses. Two or more offenses may be joined in the same indictment, presentment, or information, with each offense stated in a separate count or consolidated pursuant to Rule 13, if the offenses constitutes parts of a common scheme or plan, or they are of the same or similar character. Our courts have held that it is not necessarily the similarity between offenses, but rather the common goal or purpose at which they are directed that establishes a larger continuing common plan or scheme for purposes of determining whether to sever for trial. Offenses permissively joined in an indictment. Joinder of defendants. An indictment, presentment, or information may charge two or more defendants if each of the defendants is charged with accountability for each offense included, and each of the defendants is charged with conspiracy, and some of the defendants are also charged with one or more offense alleged to be in furtherance of the conspiracy. Or, even if conspiracy is not charged, all of the defendants are not charged in each count if the several offenses charged were part of a common scheme or plan, or were so closely connected in time, place, and occasion, it would be difficult to separate proof from one charge from proof of the other charges. Discussing the joinder and or severances of offenses and or defendants in a short period of time is just one of the small nuances of going into court, making arguments to the court, having two opposing sides arguing that whether or not a defendant should face all of his charges at one time or whether they should be separated out. It is one of the responsibilities of the district attorney to be able to understand when these charges are required to be joined together and when the law may require them to be separated. And that concludes this episode of What's the Law.
A look at the news, views, politics, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Listen each weekday morning at 9 o'clock for the Roundtable here on News Radio WGNS.
The Good Neighbor Network.
The monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio WGNS the first Friday of each month.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website. As we end our program today, we thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave now by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my two co-hosts, Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch, this is J. Paul Newman bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.
You've got 1 minute to make a difference, and Rocky the Raccoon's got the know-how.
Rocky's going digital today, folks.
He's smart. This is the Recycled Minute, powered by RecycleRightTN.com.
You know those old phones you've got sitting in drawers that you don't know what to do with? Maybe cords or gadgets containing metals that could actually be reused. Drop them off at any electronics recycler or city collection event. Don't just throw them away to be sent to the landfill. And don't throw them in the wrong recycling box either. For electronic recycling drop-off locations, visit RecycleRightTN.com. And closing it out, another great tune.
Got old paint, you don't know what to do. Don't pour it down the drain. Ooh. Rocky the Raccoon knows just what's right. Check the website, keep it clean, keep it bright. RecycleRightTN.com.